Ladies and gentlemen,
please don't desert me.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. In Egypt today, I was just watching Al Jazeera before the show. There's a great little program you can download called Live Station. It allows you to watch numerous different news channels from all over the world. And there are burning car wrecks and petrol bombs and rocks being thrown and all of this jazz and the other in Liberation Square, ironically enough. So, you know. And Barack H. O'Barry, I'm not sure what he's going to do about it, but the media commentators are saying, oh, well, you know, maybe you should protect their interests and, or better yet, support the protesters. And I have doubts that he will, considering the US gives $1.5 billion to the Egyptian president every year, and all of their tanks are made in America. And interestingly enough, since the 70s, and this was something I didn't know, that has been going on specifically with the intention of training the military to have loyalty towards the president. Now, I'm not sure if anybody else is aware, but the US has been meddling in Middle East affairs for quite some frickin' time, and I have serious doubts that they're planning to stop anytime soon. So it'd be interesting to see what developments are going on there. Also, I've been arguing with some climate cultists.
That's unusual.
Yeah, because normally I do what the climate cultists do and just walk away and not listen. but interestingly enough, despite the cold weather in England, and this is an interesting article, that about 85% or something around the region of 80% of respondents to a new survey conducted by The Guardian say that they still believe in climate change despite the recent bad weather. And 25% of the respondents still believe that climate change is not man-made. So I wonder how the oil companies are capable of funding one quarter of the population. That's assuming these statistics aren't manipulated in some case, which because it's a major newspaper, I'll assume that they are. But, you know, of course, there's no debate because, of course, when you've got like 75% plus of the people who believe in something, it certainly must be true, right? People in the direct minority have never discovered something or figured out something that the whole majority hasn't known already, right? You know, that's never happened throughout history. But apparently, also, they sent me a link to this thing called Meet the Climate Skeptics, made by the BBC, which is, interestingly enough, exposed as a climate change cultist-pushing network, saying that Lord Christopher Monckton has admitted that he doesn't know his facts about this. And I'll be very interested to see that, but I can't because it's blocked in New Zealand. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back, folks.
I got some so-called friends, they'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Yes, we do. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. www.thefringe.nz. Usually we try and make sure that we've got a wide variety of views and guests and whatnot on this show. And in particular, I find challenging your own beliefs and your own structures and even making sure that, hey, even the people who you think are your heroes are still not above reproach, still not above closer analysis. And one thing that I've really found about in the truth movement is that we've got so much infighting in all different sectors. And I think that open dialogue about these and looking at the issues as they stand, listening to both sides, both opinions, is probably the best way to go about any description of suspicion that we have of other members of the truth movement. In that spirit, we have a very fabulous guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Louis B. Some of you on the American Freedom Radio listening audience may recognize him from the Crotch Shot Radio Show, who has just sometimes called in as a pranker.
Yep.
Yep. Welcome to the show, Louis.
I received my education from FU University, majoring in
prankology.
Yes,
prankology.
Prankology. Minoring in buggery. No, I'm just kidding. No, not buggery. Wow. Wait. What does buggery mean?
It means taking things through the back door. Louis put FU in UFOs. Now,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's try to keep the show clean, huh? Anyway, moving on now.
That's right. Cleanliness, it's a family show. But one thing that we were talking about just before the show today, Louis, was about We Are Change New York. And now I just want to preface this by saying that We Are Change New York has been one of my big inspirations for getting out on the streets in New Zealand with my camera and ambushing various scum. And to their credit, you know, I'm pretty sure that I'm not the only one who's been inspired by their actions. And you were, in fact, a member of We Are Change New York for some time, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a member of We Are Change New York for 2 years. Until I started questioning the money. And actually late last year, we released the Luke Rutkowski's financial records, which proved that he was embezzling money and that he was using money that was meant for first responders, meant for the day-to-day operations of the organization We Are Change New York, and putting it in his personal bank account and using it for personal expenses. And that's proven with receipts, all black and white. This is not stuff that we've made up or fabricated. This we got the records from Luke's ex-girlfriend, Sabrina Rivera. And, I mean, it's done deal. Luke was kicked out of We Are Change recently because of this, because he turned We Are Change into his own personal dictatorship. Because, I mean, since he controlled the money, he made all the decisions. And really, We Are Change was started as a leaderless movement, or at least that's what it was supposed to be. But there was a coup. It was a coup when the original founder, Dan Wallace, passed away under suspicious circumstances. And then Luke all of a sudden just took over. And this is all admitted facts by Luke's ex-girlfriend, Sabrina Rivera. Now the issue is, which we've been exposing, is Craig Fitzgerald, who seems to have positioned himself as the new leader of We Are Change, is an admitted 32nd degree Freemason, which we are starting to suspect that he is a 33rd degree Freemason because of two interviews he's done. For one being, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have saw, the video where Charlie Veach is interviewing Craig Fitzgerald, and he makes a little slip in that video. He's like, I've been passed through all 30 degrees of Freemasonry. He makes a slip, and when you add that up, that's 33 degrees. He also did that. And another interview he had with a show that with Harry Link. I forgot where that's at. It's on YouTube, and he made that slip up again. So, you know, it seemed more like a Freudian slip than an actual real mistake, since he made it like this would be his second time making that same slip.
Now, Louis, I just want to interject here for anyone who's listening who thinks this is railing on people in the truth movement. I'm going to distance myself here. So I will, Ryan. I actually support Luke, and I support the works they've done, regardless of any of the... I haven't been involved. I haven't been to New York. I haven't met these guys. Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here the other side of the panel observing, right? But at the same time, I can see a lot of the good things they've done. And anyone who listens to the show knows I'm the last person to defend the Freemasons. But...
yeah, that's true.
But if there's a Mason and his name's Craig and he's out saying 9/11's an inside job and he's out doing against the Federal Reserve and he's against this fractional reserve system and he's against all this government corruption, then, you know, I'm not going to judge the guy.
Well, I'm sorry to interject, but this has to be... then you're forgetting one of the main things of Freemasonry is to hide in plain sight.
Abkaya. Yeah, I know.
Up front, he's gonna be saying everything you want to hear. Of course, he's gonna be saying the right things. What's he doing behind the scenes? Because Craig Fitzgerald was a member of We Are Changed before he even pursued Freemasonry.
The key is, Louis. Mm-hmm. You know you're good. I know I'm good. Luke knows he's good. People have just got to do their own thing. A Mason doesn't run my life if I'm aware of them. I'm aware of their order, okay? I'm aware of all their stuff. I mean, a Mason can do what he wants to do. You just don't let them get too much power over you. And so people in We Are Changed, don't let Craig boss you around. And I don't think Craig wants to boss people around this stage. I mean, I don't know.
And you're right. You're partly right. The thing is, We Are Changed New York has allowed him to rise in power in the group. And to what end? Why? I mean, what's he planning? These are questions I need to ask. When it comes to Luke, that's an open, that's a closed case. It's proven. It's proven what he's done. We Are Changed New York actually expelled him from the group. Last time I heard, he was no longer associated with We Are Changed New York because of his practices. And that was after a 2-year investigation. No matter what he has done good for the 9/11 truth movement, that does not excuse him to do illegal acts and to defraud people from the from donations that people in good faith gave to help advance We Are Change as a whole and not Luke Rutkowski as a singular. But this whole
and did We Are Changed grow over the years? I believe they grew and they got a number of views on their videos. And as a whole, did they have a positive effect on the United States and the world? I mean, I think they have.
Okay, which of the globalists are in jail for the crimes of 9/11?
Oh, look, we're not going to get these guys in jail. And even if you put Wolfowitz and Pearl and all these guys in jail, I mean, what's that really going to do? You've got to get rid of the sentiment that – I'm sure you agree, Lou. You've got to get rid of the sentiment that creates such conditions. You've got to get rid of skull and bones. You've got to get rid of all this corruption, all these nests.
Freemasonry, Zionism, I mean –
We can only do this through education. We can't do this through grabbing them by the hair and dragging them down into the cells, you know?
But the thing is, if you break a law, you deserve to be in jail. These people have broken laws, and in fact, when I started this back in 06, when I started doing my research, that was one of the goals, is to start putting these people in jail because they broke laws. I mean, we're just going to educate them and let them run free. I mean, what havoc can they cause if they're not stopped? And I'm not talking about violence. No, 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 no. That's what they want us to start talking about, is being violent. No, I'm talking about the letter of the law in everyone's respective sovereign countries. Whatever laws that are broken, these people need to answer for them.
But did Luke raise money for first responders or not? I mean, regardless whether Sabrina, I mean, could it be, you know, ex-girlfriends get pretty angry sometimes. I mean, could it be that Sabrina had a bit of motivation in there? I mean, I don't want to get involved in that little fight.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, whether, no matter.
Yeah, because that's one thing that I'd really want to know as well. Because you know, there is that kind of vindictive nature when relationships break up, and there's that possibility that it may just be done in spite rather than fact.
You're right. That is a possibility, but it doesn't excuse the black and white evidence that we got. And also, it doesn't excuse the fact that Charlie Giles, a first responder, sent a email to Luke demanding that unless he shows the money that was given, show the money that was raised for first responders, is not shown, he was going to seek legal action against Luke. So we have a prominent first responder demanding to see the records.
And has he taken legal action against Luke?
As of now, I have not heard anything yet. I am keeping my ears to the ground to hear. So I do have some contacts that are still within We Are Change that let me know stuff, because they want, you know, transparency, which is, again, We Are Change's principles is being transparent.
I mean, the way I look at it, Louis, is, you know, I see some young guys my own age or younger, I think Luke's a bit younger than me, I'm 26, go out and without being paid overtly and without any sort of exterior motivations, doing things from the bottom of their heart. And you can look in their eyes and you can see them confront these globalists who are intimidating people, and you can see what they do. And I look at that with my discernment and I say, well, that's a genuine person. That's a good person. I don't care if they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Mason, whatever sometimes, you know what I mean? Because a Mason like Fitzgerald is a friend over the average zombie out there, I tell you. We're in a battle against David Rockefeller types here, and whether Luke took one or two grand here or there is nothing. It doesn't matter in the scheme of things here. That's as good as disinfo, because we're wasting time looking at protoplasm type scenarios rather than, you know, what's going on in a grand scale.
I tend to agree with you. Will. Go ahead, Louis.
Well, really, I mean, the reason why we do this is because if we allow this to happen, it tends to, bad behavior like this tends to spread. And then what's going to happen? We're going to start acting like the New World Order. I mean, yeah, you know, you don't want to focus on the bad stuff. You don't want to, I mean, these are people that you're possibly going to end up in a foxhole with, so to speak. And you want to know they're honorable. You don't want to know that they're just like the people you're fighting. Think about it. Why are we going after Rockefeller? Why are we going after all these other New World Order types? Because of what they're doing. How's it looking that our own house isn't clean because certain members are acting and have the same characteristics as the
New
World Order types?
The New World Order is a reflection of society, sad to say. Well, we are a poison world. We're poison people. I'm sorry to tell you, I'm not pure. I'm not a saint. I'm not.
No one's perfect. But that doesn't give. Again, that doesn't give us carte blanche to start acting like them. We're supposed to be better. We're supposed
we're
to hold ourselves. At least
better.
Trying to be better.
What constraints do we have on our lives? If you compare, now this is getting really wild here, and this is just for argument's sake. If you compare Luke Radowski to a top globalist, what constraints does Luke have on his life compared to the globalist that may make him act in certain ways that may not be his direct intentions? Oh, how about financial constraints compared to people who print the money? Because he's not Rothschild. He's not a Rockefeller. He's not a Merovingian bloodline. Okay, so
They're not comparable adversaries, in other words. I mean, Rockefeller funds all these endowments and all of this kind of stuff. They're directly responsible for, basically mass genocide across the planet. We can't compare the two kind of thing. What I'm interested in is kind of like with the sort of transparency and helping everybody to comprehend what it is that nobody's perfect, and get past the point of infighting and reach some description of resolution. I understand that you've had people on your show that have argued for Luke and that kind of thing. What was the conclusion that was reached there, or was it just kind of like one versus the other and zero acceptance on either side?
Well, I mean, what usually ended up happening was either if they were staunchly supportive of Luke, I mean, no amount of logic was ever going to come about. I mean, no amount of logic was going to change their mind. I mean, a lot of people, especially people who have been wronged. I mean, today, which was one of the announcements I was going to make, I just got a message from We Are Change Portugal telling me that Craig Fitzgerald deleted them from the main page of WeAreChange.org because they too started asking questions about him being a Freemason. In fact, Luke actually started deleting people as well, deleting groups for asking questions about his practices with the money. I mean, who else do you know does that, tries to stop dissent?
Well, that shouldn't be done, I agree. I mean, I thought Craig Fitzgerald was a proud Freemason. I see him doing Mason hand signs in their pictures and so on. If he wants to be a Mason, just be a Mason, man. You know, who cares? But don't delete people because, you know, I don't know that for a fact, but if that's the case, well, that's wrong, yeah. But I don't know. There's bigger fish in the sea, though, right? You know that, Louis.
Of course there are bigger fish in the sea, but again, you don't want to focus on the bigger fish when there's someone behind you ready to stab you in the back. You need to know that the people you are working with are honorable and hold themselves to a higher standard. We can't.
Trust no one.
We can't.
Well, see, this reminds me of a... I was part of a organization in Auckland for about maybe, I don't know, 3 months or something like that. And the guy who was running the show was using sovereignty movement arguments and those kind of things in order to establish what he called a free society. Little did I know that he was a sociopathic scumbag who was ripping everybody off. And when I asked him about this, he started going crazy, and I said that no one is above reproach. In a free and open society, everybody has to be front of the mark. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back.
I mean, arguing about...
We're coming back here, aren't we?
All right.
Adam, can you bring the feed up, please, man?
Adam, come on.
And welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And you know, there's a risk when you look back on the truth movements and engage in the sort of what I term as patriot wars. You know, there's two people who love their country and they kind of go up against each other, sort of thing. And there's an argument that, you know, we should not talk about these sort of issues and we should focus on real issues. And my argument is that every issue deserves at least a little bit of a modicum of focus, because they're not based on absolutely nothing. And I think if you're going to grow as a truther, you need to be able to do things which are uncomfortable. And to tell you the truth, Louis, I mean, the things that you're saying here on the show make me feel very uncomfortable. And I almost don't want to hear them.
I mean, look, it's understandable. I mean, we put up with that that opposition again for 2 years. I'm used to it. I'm used to hearing, oh, well, I bet you believe that 9/11 isn't an inside job. Oh, you're a no-planer. Oh, I bet you're a new ager. Oh, you like Zeitgeist. I mean, that's silliness, and that's so far from the truth. I just want to see a movement that is above reproach. I want to see a movement where we hold each other to a higher standard, because I mean, we can't fight darkness with darkness. We have to be on the right side. We need to, you know, because these people worship the devil, worship demons. We got to be on the other side. We our power source needs to come from good. Not
they're low level Masons. You know the duality with the Masonry, the checkerboard. There are low level Masons who are largely drawn from Christianity, just like the WASPs in the Southern States, who believe they're on the right side. You see, they run soup kitchens and they run retirement villages and they do these things, okay? And they're not necessarily evil people. They're just being controlled and manipulated. And that's the way the whole system works. That's a lawyer who thinks he's tough right now because he's earning $200K down the road somewhere and looks at you down the street and goes, you're wearing nothing. I mean, it's the same sort of thing, you know. They're just in a different box in the pyramid somewhere. They think they're onto something. Whether they are or not, time will tell. And I think that's probably Craig Fitzgerald to some degree. I mean, I don't know the guy. I don't want to judge him. He's welcome to come on the show. But
yeah, I mean that's the thing. I mean, he hiding in plain sight. I mean, you're just seeing what he wants you to see that he shows on his videos and stuff. And yeah, he is doing good. He is doing good. He is very knowledgeable. He's exposing stuff. But the fact of the matter is, who he serves. You know as much as – you probably know as much as anybody, you know, what it takes to be a Freemason, the blood oaths you have to take, the fact that you worship Baphomet. I mean – and Freemasonry is not a religion. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, well, it's like a religion. No, it's not. Like how prosecutors in court, they like to – they'll use the defendant's words against him. Well – Freemasonry says that the Freemasons say they're not a religion. So, hey, if they're not a religion, they shouldn't be treated like a religion. And we both know that they don't worship Christ. They're not a Christian organization. They're not a Muslim organization. They're not a Jewish organization. They're not associated with any religion. But
okay, let me argue this, though, because I thought about this a while, too, because when I first started activism in 2007 here in Auckland, I got to know a guy, James, quite well, and it turned out he was a Mason and a very smart guy, and probably no ordinary Mason either. And he doesn't talk to me anymore. It wasn't that we had a fight or anything. It's just that I kind of distanced myself from him because I didn't like what he was into and had a few weird conversations. But the thing is, there's a lot of Masons in the States. I mean, approximately 6 million Masons. 4 million Masons. Thousands of lodges, many, it's kind of like the Jew argument or the German argument. You know, about 60% of Americans are Germanic, you know, 60% white Americans are Germanic. And so these guys are going to pop up everywhere, is my point. Do you have a policy if you're running We Are Change? We don't take Masons. We don't take Jews.
There was a vote on that, and the argument is like, where do you draw the line? I mean, if you're going to say, oh, we don't allow Masons in, I would consider that perhaps if you are part of a group which takes secret oaths and has loyalties to the group above all others, and you're not willing to divulge what those loyalties are or anything like that, then, basically you can't be trusted conceivably.
But how do you discriminate against these people? How do you get them out of these groups? Because the way I see it, if a Mason comes in,
that's a good point.
Again, you're talking to someone that was part of the group that was kicked out for asking questions for transparency. So I mean, kicking someone out who's a part of someone that wants to kill us is a no-brainer. You know, if you could kick someone out for asking a question and demanding transparency, you could kick out someone who's part of a group.
Can you prove But can you prove that Craig Fitzgerald wants to kill people?
But dude, okay, how would you feel? I mean, it's the 1940s, and you see someone with a Nazi uniform, and it's World War II, and you know, how would you feel? Would you think, well, this guy is a nice guy, I'll sit down and have some tea, or would you shoot him immediately because you know he represents?
I use that argument all the time in referring to the Masons as a whole. You can go to Argentina. You can go to Libya. You can go to Egypt. You can go to Italy. You can come here to Auckland, New Zealand, and you'll find Egyptian style, not true Egyptian, but Egyptian style obelisks, four-sided obelisks everywhere, in every major town on this planet, in every major city in this planet. And then you scratch your head and go, oh, do they have the same, global culture? No. Do they have all the same backgrounds, the same racial tendencies, the same leanings, same cultural leanings? No, of course not. Mm. It's the mark of a global cabal that the Masons are the largest, make up the largest component of. They're not the only group.
Yeah, exactly. They're not all like, it's not all carte blanche, like every single Mason is a bad person. I mean, like, for example, well, let's take the other side of the argument, we've got John Banks and John Key, who are our Prime Minister and one of our higher up mayors, or at least was up until recently, and they're 32nd degree Freemasons, you know, so they're very, very obvious, you know, by their works what bad scum they are. Whereas I'm not 100% sure if that applies to all of them. What do you think, Louis?
Well, look, this is how I think about it. Craig Fitzgerald was first a member of We Are Change before anything, which means he has done his research on everything of the enemies of us of the world to want to kill 90% of us that are on the Georgia Guidestones here in the United States. So he knows what the Freemasons are about, yet he still chose to join them. So he
knows
better.
Yeah, that blows my mind too.
He knows better. So that he's not just some dude that he's like, well, I don't know what's going on with the world. I'm uneducated. But hey, let's join the Freemasons because it'll help me get ahead in life. No. I mean... there's already that knowledge that, wait a minute, like, I mean, look, I know about Nambly. You don't see me going into a place where it has Mambla on the building, because I know what's probably going to happen. I'm going to be some Batman's girlfriend. So, you don't see people walking into, you don't see me walking into any place with that has the KKK sign out front. No, because I know it's probably going to happen. I know what they're about. I know what even though most of them are feds, mind you, but it's still not going to stop them from kicking my butt for being dark. You know what these people are about. Especially when you do the research and you tend to avoid organizations that want your death. I mean, he's educated. He's well educated. I give him that. Craig Fitzgerald is a very intelligent person. He knows his stuff about the New World Order, yet he still chose to be a Freemason. And if that doesn't raise questions in you and make you want to question him, like, why would you do that, knowing full well what they are about, knowing what they want to do to us. In fact, because you hear this, I mean, even though I don't really trust Alex Jones myself, but that's a subject for a whole different show. He talks about since Endgame, he talks bad about the Freemasons. Almost everyone in the Truth Movement has exposed Freemasonry as an evil organization, yet he still chose to become a Freemason. And yet he tries to counter this by saying,
but if we believe in freedom, we have to respect people's choice. That's the whole thing. What sort of world do we want to see? I want to see a world with true freedom and liberty, but I want to see it educated, so people can make educated choices. And I believe through education we get rid of the Masons. But we don't live in that world today.
Yeah, but I'm not going to encourage people to start running and joining the Freemasons or the Boule Society or the Zionists, or I don't know if you could join Zionists. I don't know if they got the, you know, applications out today. I don't know. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. But
this is what it gets into, though, and it gets into, oh, he's a Vatican agent and Vatican assassin and all this.
Yeah, but
stuff.
No, but he admitted.
Right. It's absolute tripe. People go and say someone's a Jesuit, and then they go, oh, I don't mean part of the, you know, Ignatius Loyola 1500s Jesuit order. I mean a Jesuit as a smart man who deceives. I've heard that said to me. I've had that written to me. Oh, I meant Jesuit as in he's a smart man who deceives. I mean, give me a break.
The difference is, Will, or if I could call you in my native tongue, Willito. Willito, you know, the thing is, he admits he's a 32nd degree Freemason. He admits it. It's not stuff that we be like, well, I think he's a Freemason because he does hand gestures, because he throws up like Masonic gang signs like he's with the Bloods or the Crips. No, he twice in two occasions, even at Ground Zero, for a memorial of the people that fell at Ground Zero last September, he's doing Freemasonic hand gestures with a rose.
He wears. I've seen it. Yeah. I mean, a number of things I can't think of right now, but I've seen that, and he's not the only Mason there, by the way. I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. All I'm saying is, if you start writing into a framework, if you start making a framework and go, here's our group and here are the rules, no Masons, because they're part of the New World Order.
How about this? How are they going to
come across?
Okay, how's about we get David Rockefeller? We are Change UN. How's that? How's about we have David Rockefeller in the group? Would you feel comfortable with David Rockefeller?
No, that's why
we know for a fact that there's a difference in point here, because David Rockefeller is a known mass murderer. So they have a kind of disparity here. Now, what I'm really curious about is
everyone knows the history of the Freemasons. Yeah, well, yeah, they're the ones that started the revolution, and they're the ones that have started revolutions, but only to benefit Freemasonry,
Let's say the founding fathers, for example. During the Revolutionary War, if there was a group like We Are Change or whatever who were fighting against the crown and trying to establish independence, and they said to themselves, we don't want any Freemasons, knowing full well that pretty much all of the founding fathers were either Freemasons or known to be associated with them, the writers of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and all of that kind of
a lot of them. Later in later years, they all stopped going. They realized it was taken over.
Yes.
I mean, the Freemasons, you know, they all realized, oh, crap, you guys got your own agenda. You don't – it's not like you guys are for liberty and freedom. They all stopped going. So, I mean, that argument is also moot because, I mean, they probably didn't realize what they were signing up for until they got to those levels. And they're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, that's a good point. Our very special guest from the Crotch Shot Radio is Louis B, ladies and gentlemen, on the
Crotch Shot Radio Show. Yes,
the Crotch Shot Radio Show, and we will be right back after these very short messages. Back live on the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, which has just, I'm happy to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we have doubled our visitors since last month. No small feat. And it's thanks very much to you, the listeners, and being very patient with us and whatnot. Our very special guest is Louis B from the Crotch Shot Radio Show. I wanted to switch gears here a little bit because I wanted to talk about 9/11 itself and why it's so important to expose 9/11 being an inside job. And Louis, yourself, what got you into activism in the first place?
Well, I was basically laid up because I was in martial arts class and I snapped my knee in half, so had a lot of time, you know, with my leg in a cast, you know, healing, and started asking myself the question, what's taking so long to catch Osama bin Laden? A 6-foot, you know, Arab on dialysis cannot be that hard to find. It can't be. So I remember, for some reason, seeing a sticker saying 9/11 is alive, visit WTC7.net, a sticker on a light post, and I decided to go there, and from there I found out about I started watching Loose Change second edition at the time, and you know, all the other, and then I discovered Alex Jones, and I went through the Police State trilogy and the, well, not the trilogy, just 2000 and
the takeover.
And, you know, and of course I saw the Eric Hushmel thing, which, you know, Improbable Collapse and stuff like that. And I started listening to Alex Jones, like everyone else does, discovered, you know, and realized that this whole thing was a lie, that 3,000 people died for nothing. And I just got pissed off and I just wanted to get these people back for killing 3,000 people for nothing. These people should still be alive. Those two buildings. In fact, the high school that I graduated from that June of that year, I used to eat lunch between those buildings because, especially during the summer, it was the coolest place to sit and eat your lunch during my senior year, because that was like a wind tunnel. It was a constant wind blowing, so it kept you nice and cool. So I viewed those buildings as like a home, you know, this was like my domain because that's, you know, you're familiar with that. So that's really what got me going, is the rage that I have against these people for killing innocent people for nothing.
And who's your inspiration? I mean, for me, I mean, it was people in talk radio and documentary filmmakers and things like that that really kind of woke me up by sharing the information and that kind of thing. Who really inspired you? I mean, I suppose it was Burmis and Loose Change as well, wasn't it?
Well, who inspired me to what?
Well, to really get into activism and trying to
honestly, I mean, yeah, Loose Change and all those other documentaries educated me and got me wanting to do my own research, but wanting to get out there was when I first found out about We Are Changing New York. It was my own rage, actually, that was my own drive that made me want to go out there and just start doing my part.
And I find that's the interesting thing about anger, is that it's kind of like a wild horse or something, and you can slap a saddle on it and you can put a bit in its mouth and you can ride it all the way into holy hell's mouth itself because of the fact that it won't stop. And I find it's basically depression plus motivation. That's really what anger is for me, because you know, I've experienced feeling a bit down myself and seen lots of other people go through it, and the only reason why they don't seem to pull themselves out of it is you know, in my opinion, well, they're not angry enough.
I just want to add,
Laurie, that there's different forms of activism all around the planet, okay? And there's this climate change mob who can't even see through the low-level deception that these corporates and Al Gore and George Soros are, you know, pulling over their eyes. And then there's levels above that. There's people who can see through that, but then they can't see that certain occult influences are pulling strings because they're above corporate level. They don't identify with the new age sort of occult movement that's steering this planet. Then there's layers above that, and so it goes. There is a chance that some people are just innocent dupes, participants in levels of this, layers of this onion, that they don't fully see to the same point that you do, and that leads to these disagreements. But Craig Fitzgerald isn't one of those people. I agree. He understands it.
Yeah, I mean, but look, the feds or secret societies use controlled opposition to fuel their agenda. I mean, what do they do to people who don't follow their orders? I mean, that's what I'm saying. There is controlled opposition. They make the they start the activism in order for them to equally control the dialogue.
Yeah, and this is extremely prominent in Egypt right now, where government workers were ordered to go into the Museum of Art or whatever the heck it was and smash stuff up and steal it and then blame it on the protesters. So, you know, this sort of thing is alive and well. I'd like to thank you very much, Louis, for coming on the show with us today. Fire out your websites, mate.
Yeah, my website is crotchshotradio.com. Check it out every day. We always got some news and stuff. My show is Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Definitely check it out tonight. We will be doing some news and stuff. Will, Vinny, thank you for having me on, and you are welcome to come on my show anytime you want. Just say, hey, Louis, I want to get on your effing show, and you know, I'll be like, all right. So, later, guys.
All right.
Peace, man.
Peace.
There he goes, Louis B from the Crotch Shot Radio Show. Ladies and gentlemen, nice, friendly and fabulous debate that we got into on this one. I certainly hope we don't offend any good truthers out there. But hey, debate needs to happen in every single sector, is my belief. Whether or not you want to believe it or take it to the next level, you should at least listen to every point of view. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. And next hour, we will be coming up, continuing on, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, The Vinny Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. New Zealand's unconventional news. We have a very special guest for you for our Kiwi Collaborator section today, a good friend of mine. His name is Andrew Hendry, the Director of the Natural Health Care Centre in Wellington in New Zealand, the largest natural and holistic health care centre we happen to have. Andy, welcome to the program, mate.
Hey, Vinny, how are you?
Well, you know my party line, bro, borderlining on fabulous.
Great.
Now, we've got a couple of different things that we're going to be discussing while we've got you for the duration of this hour. But in this first short segment, I'd love you to just kind of introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them a little bit about what you're all about, mate.
Yeah, okay, sure. Well, I've been involved in the natural health industry for around 6 or 7 years now. Originally got involved when I was diagnosed by my doctor as having high cholesterol, and he says to me if I didn't do something about my health, I'd have to be on drugs for the rest of my life. Well, that wasn't really a palatable outcome for me, so I went about my own journey of seeking, and I guess around about the same time, my partner had some of her own health conditions, which sort of resulted in mildly debilitating sessions whereby she'd, just hanging out the washing would kind of tire her. So we're both kind of looking at nutrition and supplements and things like that, and it really grew from there. After a couple of years of finding out sort of the truth around healthcare, I ended up opening a natural health centre, and then a couple of years after that, I acquired another one, and really it's gone from there.
And one of them very interesting about you, Andy, is that you've managed to keep very youthful over these years, and I would in no small way attribute that to the practices that you've adopted.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've been taking vitamins and minerals and essential fatty acids and drinking lots of water and eating whole foods for many years now. So it's very, very basic formula, very simple, but it's very effective. And I've seen seen great results just from simply doing that with lots of people.
Yeah. Well, and it's the thing, right? We've got this mainstream medical establishment that kills more people than it saves.
Fourth biggest killer in the world in most Western countries.
Yeah. Well, are they the fourth biggest saver of life, though? I mean, like, it's the interesting thing. We've got death statistics to draw on, but we don't have any survival statistics to go on. But I don't think it's like the majority of people who go to hospital don't come out again. You know, it's not like it's the Willy Wonka factory. Nobody ever goes in and nobody ever comes out. But it's pretty close.
At the food they feed them in hospitals, it's not really much of a surprise.
Yep, it's just not on. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A very special guest from the National Health Centre in Wellington, New Zealand, is Andrew Hendry, and we'll be right back after the break.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the skies. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, live on the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Our very special guest joining us from Wellington today, the windiest and most highly concentrated region of the country, if you're talking about political action, really. I mean, they got some very, very hardcore groups down there. Big shout out to Wellington, 9/11 Truth, several members of which we have had on the show. Now, Andy, we wanted to get into natural options for cancer sufferers, because cancer's really, really big at the moment. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that cancer is bigger than Jesus. And it sends a lot of people that way. Now, what are some of these natural options for cancer sufferers that you talk about?
Yeah, well, I guess it always surprises me that cancer is a disease that's such hard work for the orthodox establishment. It's probably because they're trying to treat it with toxic drugs. And if you look at the testimonies of some of the leading doctors and naturopaths in this area, they'll tell you that cancer is caused by excess toxicity. So, of course, trying to treat it with more toxins, you know, it's going to lead to one thing, and that's not health. Really, the way to treat cancer is to use natural substances that allow the body, which is its own healing mechanism, to heal itself. So, I've spoken to and worked with many naturopaths and integrated doctors that have had amazing success in curing cancer. For example, one naturopath that I know personally and am friends with has cured over 1,000 cases of cancer in the last 20 years, a 100% success rate. Of course, she's been pursued and by the orthodox establishment, and she often operates in a lot of fear, so she's kind of underground a wee bit. But You know, I can speak right now of three cancer cures that you could, that you can basically produce from your kitchen. I'm not sure if any of your listeners have heard of the Budwig formula, which is simply a mixture of cottage cheese and flaxseed oil. There's also another one made up of maple syrup and bicarb of soda. I knew a naturopath who had successfully used that to treat a tumour the size of a softball. One day the individual took a little bit too much of that mixture and experienced an extreme amount of pain throughout the night, but woke up the next morning to find that the tumour had halved in size. There's also another famous recipe that's come out of South America, which is a mixture of aloe, arborescence and organic honey, which effectively makes active the 300 phytonutrients in the aloe and gives a huge amount of support to the cells. So it's really talking about cellular health as opposed to health using synthetic drugs and surgery. So if we can support the cells, then by nature we're going to have healthy organs. And that's pretty much consistent with a lot of the chronic illness.
Well, I totally agree. That's the basis of holistic health, isn't it? It's about feeding the actual cell and the mitochondria of the cell and the cell function in general, isn't it?
What's the difference between holistic health and natural health, though?
Well, holistic health, I mean, there's obviously lots of different definitions you'll find, but to me, holistic health is effectively an identification that the body is more than simply what we see at a physical level. So, for example, I could talk about the seven chakras within the body. I can talk about different bodies, the etheral body, the mental body, the emotional body. It's really treating illness by using a full body of knowledge, not just what our science can observe and see. So that's holistic health. Natural health, of course, is using natural substances like plant-based remedies and vitamins and things, as opposed to using anything that's synthetic. Because what we need to remember, and a very important point, is that any synthetic substance that you put into your body requires your body to go through a detoxification process to remove. So that by nature includes all synthetic drugs, because for a drug to get a patent, it needs to be modified. So they're really the two definitions. So treating the whole body using natural substances is natural and holistic health.
And of course, Western healthcare, I say this word operatively because they kind of use that same methodology pretty much everywhere now, not just in the West. In my opinion, it almost does more damage than it stops. There's well documented evidence that natural health and holistic health is far more effective at treating disease. For instance, in the Spanish flu outbreak in the early 1900s, I think it was something like 2% of people who went to see a naturopath to help them with their symptoms died. And something like 70% of people who went to see their doctor died.
yeah.
So, there's quite a disparity.
Indeed. I mean, I guess we need to be fair and say that, if I was to have a car accident or some sort of traumatic incident, there'd be one place I'd want to be, and that is in a modern hospital. So certainly for your trauma conditions and for your acute conditions, which are short term, they have amazing technology that allows them to keep people alive and all that. But it's really the treating of chronic illness, which is your long-term illnesses, with synthetic drugs and surgery. It's not been successful, and I can't imagine that it ever will be successful. All we're doing with synthetic drugs is suppressing symptoms, and surgery is a somewhat primitive way of administering healthcare. If we can
Integrated approach? I mean, like, for example, if you walk into a hospital and there's the people that will treat you for chronic conditions and things of that nature, which you're saying about, and then, of course, you go down the other way, which is the accident and emergency room. I mean, would that be a better model of perhaps running the healthcare system?
Yeah, for sure. And that's what we're seeing in recent years, is these integrated healthcare centres opening up around the world and actually being very, very successful, whereby we have doctors who are open to some of these natural modalities, working with naturopaths and acupuncturists and all sorts of different types of therapists getting together. That really is an ideal way, because what we get, the advantage of modern science and modern technology, coupled with the traditional way of treating illness using plants and natural substances.
But there's a lot of resistance to that kind of idea, isn't it, from orthodox medicine. They basically say, oh, that's quackery, or, and they lie all the time as well. You know, like this recent thing with, example, Alan Smith, who's cured of swine flu with high-dose vitamin C, and they say, oh, there's no evidence, even though there's 70 years of documented evidence, and it's approved by MedSafe.
Yeah, it is extraordinary, really. I don't understand why so many doctors are really so close to any other approaches to healthcare, but I'm pretty sure that synthetic drugs is not the only way to fix someone's body. And I've seen it just time and time again. When I was working in my health centres at an operational capacity, every day I would see miracles walking out of there. For example, one woman who had some kidney transplant 10 years earlier and had to take something like 25 pills a day, had not slept more than 2 hours a night for almost a decade. Now, she was prescribed a simple magnesium supplement by our naturopath, and 2 weeks later she came back to see us, and within a week she was sleeping like a baby 8 hours through the night. Now, the fury that she levelled at her doctor for not telling her to simply take some magnesium to help her sleep was quite something. So, why they're not educated, why they're not open, I don't know. But it's not a great situation. I think many people in the community are now working out that they can get back their healthcare by finding these things out for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Is that if you are in any way sick or whatever, you're probably going to be a lot more healthy if you take responsibility for your own health, rather than what's happening nowadays is that people are kind of abdicating all their personal responsibility and saying, oh, doc, just give me a pill. I don't care how it works or why it works or anything, just as long as it works. And, and because of the fact that they have that sort of apathetic approach to it, they'll take these pills even though they don't work, and they'll keep taking them because they don't even decide to do any modicum of research about it.
Mm. You've cracked the nut on the head there. And, the two big words are personal responsibility. Don't go and give the responsibility for your own health to anybody. Your health is not like your car. It's not like, I've got a problem with my car, I go to the mechanic. I've got a problem with my health, I go with my health, I go to the doctor. Your body is what carries your human experience. And when that stops working, then that's the end of your experience, So it is something to take very seriously. And there is so much misinformation out there in the community about, healthcare. That it's really up to the individual to go and research for themselves and find out, and also work out what works best. I mean, for example, acupuncture is a hugely successful and popular natural modality, but for me, it really doesn't do a lot, But I find other types of modalities are very, very successful that might not be successful for other people. So, again, it's about finding out what works for you, best for you. The orthomolecular medicine guys have really got it when they say it's about individual. It's about the individual. It's everyone's different, and we've all got to find out what works best for us. So.
Well, and this is the difficulty that we have. I mean, when we've got government agencies involved here, if you find out that there's something wrong with it, getting to the point where you're actually even capable of changing it is a uphill battle. In fact, it's more of an uphill battle when you're trying to push a bulldozer that's broken down up over that hill, and all you've got is a couple of slaves to do it.
Indeed.
And the difficulty with this kind of thing is that advocacy gets blocked on every single sector. And this is, of course, not defined specifically to the healthcare industry. I would assume that if you are challenging any establishment, regardless of whether that be healthcare or not being an inside job, then you're always going to experience vast amounts of opposition and indeed demonization and criticism. Now, would you be able to divulge a little bit, Andy, in your experience? What have you experienced, any of that kind of nonsense with the practices that you're promoting?
No, we haven't. the way that, that the businesses are structured, we haven't had too much problems with regulators coming in. But you know, I'm aware of others that have had some problems. I mean, really, I think looking to what happens in the USA with the FDA is probably the best example of regulators, you know, having quite a heavy-handed approach to dealing with you know, that which threatens them, really. But we have to remember that the pharmaceutical drug industry is probably one of the biggest industries in the world. And, you know, it's a well-quoted fact that in 2003, the top 10 drug companies earned more profit than the remaining 490 companies in the Fortune 500. So we're talking about an extraordinary amount of money. And all that money buys a whole lot of lobbyists. And I know that just in Wellington here, we have approximately 500 drug lobbyists that are, you know, talking to our bureaucrats, talking to our politicians with big fat salaries and big fat credit cards. You know, that gets an awful amount of influence, you see. I mean, when we think about then the number of lobbyists that we'd find in the USA and Australia and throughout Europe, you know, the numbers would be even probably even higher.
Yeah, yeah. And well, the interesting thing is, do we even have a register of lobbyists in New Zealand?
I'm not too sure, actually.
Yeah, because I was thinking that I think it was Penny Bright that was talking about this, that we needed one, which led me to believe that we don't have one in the first place. So it's, it must be very, very easy for lobbyists to get in there if they're not required to even register who they're working for.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it wouldn't serve the lobbyists for that to be, so they'd be working pretty hard to avoid that. In the same sense that the iatrogenic death toll, that is the death toll as a result of doctors, that count was discontinued, I think, in about 1995 because of publishing how many people are dying because of their doctor through, you know, properly prescribed, properly administered pharmaceutical drugs is not ideal. So, yeah. You know, we're looking, when you consider, you know, pretty much all the Western countries, you know, I'm talking about Britain, America, and certainly New Zealand, it's pretty consistent that the iatrogenic death toll is about three times the road toll. So, for example, in New Zealand, it's around, last count was around 1,500, and our road toll is about 400 or 500. In the UK, the road toll is around 3,500, and you know, the iatrogenic is about 10,000 there. And in the States, it's around 100,000 people die as a result of drugs and their doctors. So, you know, the numbers are getting up there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and this is the thing. When the news reports on car accidents, it's like they'll report on a car accident where even one or two people got injured, but they will. But I have yet to see any reporting of any equal stature on, oh, a person got injured by their doctor, or a person got killed by their doctor, or anything like that. It's just totally unbalanced. That's insane. It's almost like there's an agenda going on here to cover up for the medical industry. You know, I mean, maybe this is a conspiracy theory, but maybe it's done intentionally. I don't know. But the fact is, they don't report on how dangerous the medical industry is. They do report on how dangerous it is to go about driving. And you know, I don't know about you, bro, but I've been to a hospital very, very few times, and I've been driving a heck of a lot. So if the so if driving was as dangerous as the news made out, I probably would have been to hospital more.
Yeah,
I mean, that's my bag about it, you know, because I just don't get it, because maybe because I think about things, you know. that's my problem, you know. People say, oh, Vinny, you shouldn't think, mate, you know, it's too hard, it's not worth the effort.
Yeah, sometimes it is, especially when it comes to your healthcare.
Oh, straight up, man. I mean, jeepers creepers. What is taking responsibility for your own health ever done for anybody?
Saved many lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It saved many a life, because when you know about how to keep yourself healthy, you know how to make sure that you don't wind up getting sick, so that you don't wind up going to hospital and getting killed by them. Might be a bit of a carte blanche statement there, but there you have it.
Yeah, well, it's probably good advice, actually. If you can keep out of hospital, it's ideal. And you do that by, you know, taking your vitamins and your minerals and essential fatty acids and antioxidants, drinking lots of water and whole foods, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's part of what detoxifying the body itself. And currently, I mean, nobody would argue, unless, of course, they were retarded, that that we're living in a toxic environment. All right. You know, indeed. It is so, so gross out there, man. You walk into a supermarket, you have a look at all the things that are supposed to be healthy, like the fruit and vegetables, and they're either GMO or they're nutrient deficient, or they don't have any enzymes left because they've been kept in the deep freeze, or, you know, this, that, or the other. And then beyond that singular aisle of possible healthy stuff, then you've got about 10 or 20 more aisles full of stuff that is definitely not good for you and will most likely kill you if that's the only stuff that you eat. Our very special guest from the Natural Health Center in Wellington is Andrew Hendry. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, continuing on the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, The Vinny Eastwood Show.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Yes, he has. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show on the fastest 2 hours in talk radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. I got it out loud. Our very special guest joining us from the Wellington Natural Health Centre is Andrew Hendry. Now, before the break, we were talking about the supermarkets and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think the song kind of really embodies the transportation of food is something that I'm really kind of ticked off with, is because, you know, it costs a lot in terms of nutritional value, and not to mention in terms of petrol, to transport ridiculously huge amounts of products all over the place instead of having a local supplier, which is, well, basically the opposite. And what's your take on this, Andy?
Yeah, well, a lot of people say to me, look, if I eat a balanced diet, why do I need to take extra supplements? But if you look to the science of our food these days, and when I say science, I'm always very careful because there's really two types of science. There's the science that we all sort of understand and believe to be correct, and then there's what I call ethical science. So there's been so much corporate sort of fiddling of so many scientific studies, and in fact in 2005 the American journal Nature published a study whereby they'd surveyed a huge number of scientists and found that about 20% of them were prepared to cook their data or change their data to suit the company that was sponsoring the study. So we know from that study that at least one-fifth of all science is probably not correct, you know. So when I look to the scientific studies, I make sure that I understand who has written them, what their intentions were, who's funding them, and all those sort of things. So looking at some ethical science on our soils, we find that it's around about half the amount of nutrients in our soils today that we had 50 years ago. So, you know, straight away, when they're being taken out the ground, they're about half as nutrient rich. Then, of course, as you say, you know, we're transporting them halfway around the country, halfway around the world, which further affects the nutrient value. So, a chap called Patrick Holford, a very, very famous British chap who founded the Institute of Optimum Nutrition, he states in his book that the average, to get 1 gram of vitamin C, you'd need 22 supermarket oranges. You know, now typical mammals that are our size secrete about 3 to 6 grams each day. So, you know, to get our daily dose of vitamin C, we'd need to eat at least 66 supermarket oranges. Well, that just ain't going to happen, you know. So,
And what's WHO's rating for, what's the RDI as estimated by the World Health Organization? Is it like 200 milligrams?
No, it's 50. It's 50 milligrams for vitamin C for the RDA, which is, well, they call it the recommended daily allowance, but it's really more appropriately termed ridiculous dietary arbitraries. They really don't mean a whole lot, you know. They're successful in stopping sort of the scurvy and the rickets and all those hideous diseases of 100 odd years ago. But if you're talking optimum nutrition, you really, really need to get it a lot higher. So, you know, humans and monkeys are two mammals that don't secrete our own vitamin C. So, you know, when you look at a typical mammal about the size of a human, they tend to secrete between 3 and 6 a day, 3 and 6 grams a day of vitamin C. You know, a goat secretes 13 grams, and when they're stressed, they secrete around 100 grams. So, you know, 50 milligrams, which is what, 1/20th of a gram, is really insignificant. So it might have been successful saving the sailors on the boats, but it's not going to give you an optimum functioning body.
At the same time, though, our governments, like here in New Zealand, would recommend against taking vitamin C supplements even, saying it's just not necessary or some of them are dangerous.
I mean, the idea that they're dangerous is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, there are certain conditions whereby vitamins aren't beneficial, for example, vitamin A for pregnant women and things like that, so you do have to have some degree of awareness. But for the most
part... Synthetic vitamin A is quite dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, but for the most part, the toxicity level of most vitamins is so extraordinarily high, you'd really struggle to reach it. The best book I can recommend on this is from Patrick Holford. It's called The Optimum Nutrition Bible. It's around about sort of $50. If you're going to make any investment in your healthcare, go and buy that book, because that really covers everything you need to know in one simple package on how to deal with your health. So.
Just say the title of that book again, sorry?
It's Patrick Holford, and it's called H-O-L-F-O-R-D, The Optimum Nutrition Bible. Now, he founded, about 25 years ago, he founded the Institute of Optimum Nutrition in the UK, and he's now recognised as probably the best speaker on mental illness and on nutrition in the UK. He spends a lot of time consulting with government and that, and he's done some fabulous work. In addition to that, I recommend also your listeners look at the body of knowledge, which is called orthomolecular medicine. Now, that science was founded by a chap called Linus Pauling. He's a very, very famous scientist. In fact, he's arguably the greatest American scientist ever. And he is, in fact, the only human to have ever won 2 Nobel Prizes in separate categories. So, you know, he's no insignificant man. He was the one who really pioneered the whole vitamin C megadose sort of approach to treating disease. And from that has grown a large body of knowledge supported by some of the world's top integrated doctors around the whole mega vitamin and superfood nutrition for dealing with illness. So useful website is orthomolecular.org. So there's a couple of areas that I would recommend that your listeners sort of research and look into if they're concerned about really winning back their health.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, Andrew, is that orthodox medicine itself and in this, you know, so-called Western industrial society, I mean, how are they training doctors? Because I was under the impression that nutrition forms a huge part of health, right? But they don't train medical doctors very much in nutrition and in some cases not at all.
Mm. Yes, it's been an area of a lot of interest for me. I mean, exactly how much training are our doctors given in nutrition? Because it's my belief that superfood nutrition and megavitamin therapy has a huge impact on health. And, you know, for years now, I've been asking people that are in the know, you know, how many hours? And the responses I get is between 2 and 8 hours is the typical amount of time or training that a doctor is given throughout the period of his degree. So what are they, 5 or 6 years to become a doctor? You know, so, you know, 2 to 8 hours, sometimes 5 hours, that's not a lot, you know. That's not a lot given the extraordinary amount of evidence there is to suggest that nutrition and vitamins have a huge impact on health.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, like, surely solving the problems before they manifest themselves in our bodies and in society as a whole is the way to go. But, you know, to think of all the hardship and problems that are caused in society through just the basic malnutrition. And then people go out and think of your health freak if you have any interest whatsoever in furthering your own sort of and bettering your own health. People think, oh, you're strange. It's like anything. It's like trying to learn anything about your government. You're a weirdo all of a sudden because that's society's conditioned.
I mean, the question is, how do you want to spend the last 10 years of your life, you know? And I'd much rather spend it out enjoying nature and that than sitting in a hospital bed feeling pretty terrible.
I don't know. Adult diapers is my preferred methodology.
but it's all this live young, you know, live fast, die young sort of approach. And I'm tell you, the girls my age are just looking haggard, some of them. I mean, they're on the booze every night. And I mean, it's really kind of showing.
It's like the seven visible signs of nihilism, you know.
I mean, I think everyone knows that young people love getting out and socialising and doing all sorts of fun things. But, you know, and it's probably a phase that they'll work through. But, again, they can support their health by eating properly and taking proper supplements and, you know, consuming vegetable juices. You know, all of that stuff helps support the immune system to sort of carry them through their partying days and sort of pop out the other side and still have some health to work with.
On that subject also, it's manufactured culture, isn't it? Their partying days, as if it's like, you know what I mean? I'm not having to dig at you, but I'm just saying the way that's accepted in society, that phase of our existence from 16 to 24 or whatever, it's just such a manufactured, concocted figment of culture. It sickens me, really.
They seem to value it above all else is what I find interesting. Like, for example, if you're actually doing something with yourself or doing something important in your life, they say, oh, bro, you just need to get a life. And by get a life, they mean go out and get drunk and get laid.
Yeah, that's always getting a life. How many times have we heard that? I mean, didn't we have that the other night, Vinny? We're at this barbecue and we're talking to some guy about 9/11 being an inside job. And he's like, you got too much time. I mean, it's always the same argument, say, get a life, you've got too much time, and then you tell people you've got a life, and they're just like, get arrested, get incarcerated, kill yourself, do something. So just get out of our hair,
swallow
get
the
out
stuff
of our
under
time.
The sink, you know? It doesn't make any sense, right, does it?
Empty out the U-bend into your throat.
Yeah, and this is the connection I find, Andy, don't you think, between a toxic environment and toxic personality? You know, like every single person who comes up to me and they say, oh, man, this person was a real asshole to me, man. They were so cruel. They were so stupid. And I say, what do they eat? And they say, well, nothing but meat and drink Coca-Cola. And I say, well, there it is.
Yeah, all low vibration stuff. I mean, you know, we talk about the chemicals in our food and the toxic environment. But, you know, when you look at the thousands of chemicals that are released when someone, you know, into the body, when someone gets angry or sits on jealousy for many years, I mean, you know, they're just as damaging as the artificial ones we're putting into our body. So, you know, not only healthy food, but also healthy emotions, healthy perspectives on life, that you know, it's all part of sort of the whole holistic health package. So, it is a complete and whole approach, really.
Well, and I suppose that's what you call balance, right? And it's like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the key to balance is being able to swing to either extreme and still being able to come back to the center. It's once you swing one way or the other and you cannot return, that's when you're in real, real trouble. Like, for example, if you can't think of doing anything else but getting up in the morning and having a cigarette and drinking, you know, like a fifth of vodka or something like that and then going out partying and that's the only thing you can do and you don't know how to do anything but that, then you're in a very, very dangerous position where basically you're compromising everything that you're capable of being for the rest of your life because you're not actually able to expand yourself.
Indeed, yeah.
It's the idea, though, of just eating health, eating living, vibrant, chlorophyll-rich plants. I mean, just that idea, it makes sense, right? Like,
yeah, it does.
Nature is designed to appeal to our senses. I mean, I know a lot of things are bright and vibrant and poisonous too. But
think our grandparents, or certainly our great grandparents, you know, pretty much ate 100% organic food. You know, it's only really since the Second World War that these thousands and thousands of chemicals have entered our food chain, and you know, we don't really know where this is going, but, you know, it's, again, it's often quoted that, you know, this generation of children will be the first generation to die younger than their parents. Well, that's not exactly a progressive way forward, is it, given the amount of science and technology that we have?
Yeah, well, it is progressive if you take the meaning of progressive to mean communist.
The Japanese have a different culture, though, don't they? I mean, the Japanese, I've read that the most prominent supplement taken there is Yayama chlorella, which they grow in these giant farm-type systems. I in fact, consume some myself. But, I mean, that's widespread in Japan, and they actually have the highest life expectancy in the world.
Yeah, the Japanese are well known for their diet. I mean, they eat a lot of raw fish. You know, they eat a lot of vegetables, and so, you know, a lot of fish. All the fish oil is highly beneficial, of course. So,
Well, and it just goes to show you how much of an effect a basic diet can have. You know, I mean, it's garbage in, garbage out. I mean, let's say I remember I was friends with somebody in Dunedin who used to use heroin, and she actually still looked very, very young and very, very healthy. And she said the difference between me and all the other junkies that I was associating with is I took care of my body. I made sure that I ate. I made sure that I drank lots of water, and I made sure that I took lots of vitamins and minerals. Everybody else turned into like this skeletal type vomitous figure, and she remained more or less healthy whilst whacked out on smack. So there you go. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Andrew Hendry, but we don't advocate smack, and we'll be right back after the break.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Yes, it
that's
is.
What you mean. You mean it's business time.
Oh. It's business.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in conjunction with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest, Andrew Hendry, joins us on the line here. Now, a final segment here, we wanted to talk about little things that everybody can do to improve their health. What's your advice, Andy?
Well, I've, over the years, been lucky enough to watch some amazing integrated doctors and naturopaths present and have conversations with them. And through that time, I've noticed a common thread of recommendations that they come forward with. So I kind of give people the same advice when I'm asked that question. And that is to establish a platform of supplementation using multivitamins, multiminerals, essential fatty acids, which are your omega-3s, and antioxidants. That seems to be the common thread of advice that's given. You know, multivitamin. So there's 17 vitamins, and you want to make sure that if you're buying vitamins, that they're as natural as possible, of course. But you know, sometimes our budgets don't always allow that. But you know, you've got a good broad range of those vitamins. Multi-minerals, you want to ensure that you're not only getting all the macro minerals, which is your magnesiums and your zincs and all that, but also all your trace minerals. So there's around 70 trace minerals that have been identified as being beneficial. So a good mix of vitamin and minerals. Essential fatty acids. Well, I use flaxseed oil. I tend to use a plant-based omega-3 as opposed to using fish oils. I know that a lot of people like fish oils, but I just think that you know, we're already doing enough to our global fisheries without devastating them more, and consuming plant-based supplements I think is preferable for me. There's also the other thing that There tends to be a lot of mercury in fish these days. So I use flaxseed oil. And antioxidants, well, there's plenty of delicious berry drinks that you can buy. So, I mean, I try and eat as close to nature as I can. So if I can avoid taking a pill and get my my concentrated supplements in the form of foods, then that's something that I like to do. Of course, you can't forget the other basic routines, which is making sure you're getting plenty of fresh water each day, preferably without fluoride in it. At least a liter or two. Fresh veggies, fresh fruits, organic if possible, lots of nuts and seeds, whole foods, your beans, your legumes, your lentils. And of course, good lean meats. I'm not a vegetarian. I enjoy my fish. I love that. White fish, salmon. I eat a little bit of red meat, and I like chicken too. So, that tends to be the advice I give people when asked.
Well, I think that if we're ever really going to get everybody healthy, okay, everybody kind of needs to follow methodologies that work. And currently, the whole method of the supermarket doesn't work, because if anybody's going to get any real nutritional value, you're not going to get it from there. And I'd question even whether or not organic food stores, whether or not you can get the proper nutrition there, or because I would think that possibly a smaller scale as possible would probably be the most effective. For example, having a garden in your backyard will be far more beneficial to your own nutritional requirements than any amount of supermarket food. Oh yeah, and in the United States now, you can get fined up to $5,000 for growing an organic garden in your backyard.
Well, no, the larger point is if they're spraying aircraft around the place with aluminium and mercury, and acidifying our soil so that we can't grow anything, or that we've got these heavy metals landing on our fruit and vegetables. I mean, that's a worry.
How are you watering your garden these days? You're watering it with fluoridated water a lot of the time, aren't you?
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
so you're really getting concentrated amounts of fluoride in your diet. So certainly removing that from your water is highly beneficial. I think,
purchasing the cereals most people have.
Purchasing organic food is great, but I still don't believe that you're going to... I mean, purchasing organic food would give you good nutrition, but I'm interested in optimum nutrition. I'm interested in high vitality. Now, I've done a bit of work with an integrated therapist in Sydney, and they had a huge amount of success using oral chelation therapy. So what that means is you basically really nutrient saturate the body. And what they found when they really, really put a whole load of vitamins and minerals into the body, they found that it was starting to naturally detox. So they were having huge amounts of success removing heavy metals from the bodies of people by just really giving them a whole load of vitamins. So obviously yep. they had a lot of experience. I don't recommend that people go out and do this without talking to a naturopath or a health professional. But it just shows you, that the more you take, the more beneficial it can be. And you're going to chase out all those chronic illnesses that we seem to think hit us at the end of life sort of arbitrarily. A lot of it's just excess toxicity, excess acidity within the body. So alkaline,
Yeah, and people just call it, it's just natural die-off, it's just natural. Yeah, but on the subject of supermarkets, that in itself is a graphic demonstration of how centralized the powers become and how our basic right to grow and produce our own food has been taken away from us. And that's why I'm against the idea of cramming people into compact cities and calling it civilization. We all go to the same supermarket and have packaged foods with 10 layers of plastic over them. And it's just the whole idea of it's alien, and it's what I see it as a communist ideal. I see it as anti-freedom.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Have you got a website there?
We have a website, www.nhc.co.nz. It's more for the therapists. If you want to take a look at some of the different modalities that are available.
All right. Andrew Hendry, ladies and gentlemen, from the Natural Health Care Centre in Wellington, New Zealand. And we'll be back tomorrow with, more awesome stuff, really. I hope so. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll see you again.